The following is a presentation of the American College of Osteopathic Internists.
Welcome to the 2017 Internal Medicine Board Review Course, sponsored by the American College of Osteopathic Internists. The course was held March 22nd through 26th, 2017, at the JW Marriott Las Vegas Resort and Spa. The course featured nationally known speakers presenting a wide variety of topics of interest to the internist preparing for certification or recertification in the specialty of internal medicine. Unknown pulmonary function testing and chest x-rays is presented by Dr. Amita Vasoya and Dr. Thomas Morley.
I'm back. I hope this will be more engaging. I tailored it so that you can participate, and I don't have... Did you take the laser pointer? Thank you. All right, so there are 20 slides, and each one I have presented an x-ray with a question, so hopefully we can go through it together, and I'm sorry there's no cash prize for the winner, but hopefully you'll pass your boards. So, question one, 65-year-old lifelong smoker presents with fever, chills, cough, and purulent sputum. So, looking at the x-ray, your choices are bronchogenic carcinoma, lung abscess, mycetoma, or bronchogenic cyst. Who's in favor of A? B? Very good. And you're right, it's lung abscess. And what you see here is an abnormality in the left lung. It's a large cavity, and when you look at cavities, you want to, in your mind, you want to differentiate, is it a thick-walled cavity or a thin-walled cavity? And in this situation, it is a thick-walled cavity, and it has an air fluid level, so you know there's some infectious or active process going on. And for lung abscesses, some of the organisms you want to remember is the anaerobes, Pseudomonas, Klebsiella, staph can cavitate. So those organisms keep in mind. Any organism related to aspiration, that is also on the list. The reason why, bronchogenic carcinoma, it's not bronchogenic carcinoma primarily because it has the air fluid level, it's thick-walled, but some carcinomas can cavitate, and the most common cavitating bronchogenic carcinoma is squamous cell. It's not mycetoma, and it's not bronchogenic cyst. It's not bronchogenic cyst primarily because it's not in the classic location. Usually, the bronchogenic cysts occur in the middle mediastinum. So our next patient presents with chronic dyspnea and restrictive defect on PFTs. A is coal workers' pneumoconiosis, B is fibrotic lung disease, C is pleural plaques, and D is eggshell calcifications. A? B? C? Oh, you guys are good. And it's not, you're right, it is C, pleural plaques. And what you see here is these these are large pleural plaques lining the surface of the lung, the pleura. And if they are extensive enough, they can encase the entire lung and cause restriction, and that phenomenon is called lung encarasse. And you can see that on PFTs. You can also have fibrotic disease that can cause restrictive findings on your PFTs. Eggshell calcifications are more much smaller. They're denser, and they're usually in the hilar regions, classically seen in your silicosis patient. And this is not clearly not fibrosis. Usually fibrosis is more interstitial, linear, usually at the bases. And it's not coal workers' pneumoconiosis either, which has got a diffuse bilateral pattern. Patient 3 complains of chronic cough, which often wakes him up in the middle of the night. And what is the most likely diagnosis? Asthma, heart failure, reflux, and or fibrosis. So what do you see here? a normal x-ray or abnormal x-ray? Well, this area looks okay. What do you see behind the heart? What is this? A hiatal hernia, right. So this person probably has reflux, which is causing their symptoms. Cystic fibrosis patient complains of chronic cough with sputum production. And this is the findings on x-ray and CAT scan. Emphysema, bronchiectasis. Good. Fibrosis or alpha-1 antitrypsin. You're right, it's bronchiectasis, and what you can, if you look at the x-ray, it's abnormal. You see, you can get a sense that the right lung, there is volume loss. There's also interstitial pattern. You see some bronchiectatic disease here and over here, and then the CAT scan finding is much clearly represents the bronchiectatic changes. You have the saccular bronchiectasis or the large cystic structures, the variceal or the toothpaste shadow, and then you also have the tram lines or the traction bronchiectasis. Those are the different radiographic manifestations of bronchiectasis. It's not emphysema, it's got more interstitial pattern, and it's not fibrosis, and it's not alpha-1. This patient is asymptomatic. A is active miliary TB, choice B, post-varicella pneumonia, choice C, silicosis, and choice D, metastatic disease. You can yell it out. A. Well, the answer is actually post-varicella pneumonia, and I put it there because not many people think of it. It's not active miliary TB because that patient would likely have symptoms, constitutional symptoms of some sort, I would hope, if they have miliary pattern. Silicosis, you could see nodular patterns, calcifications, but it's usually upper lobe predominant disease. More commonly, you would see the eggshell calcifications. And metastatic disease, I think these are too tiny. They're calcified, so that would not be on our list. So the answer is post-varicella. This patient complains of cough. And here's your x-ray. Choice A is mediastinal mass, atelectasis, accessory azygous lobe, or substernal thyroid. A? B, very good. What you see here is clearly the abnormalities in the right upper lobe, and what you see here is homogeneity, and then you see this reverse S sign. It's called the reverse S sign of Golden, which is classic for right upper lobe atelectasis. And if you look closely, you can see that the right hemidiaphragm is elevated. Usually, it's more than it appears more than it should be. And then this is actually the fissure, the minor fissure being pulled all the way up because there's probably an obstruction in the right upper lobe bronchus. This patient is a 62-year-old immunocompetent patient who complains of chronic dry cough and progressive dyspnea. Choice A is bronchiectasis, B is idiopathic pulmonary fibrosis, C is asbestosis, and D is pneumocystis gyrovasia pneumonia. A, B. Yes, you guys are right. It is B. Some of the tip-offs in your question is the patient is classically in their 60s. Usually they're female, but they're in their 60s. They're immunocompetent, and the complaint is a dry, nonspecific cough, and it's progressive dyspnea. On exam, you may hear, fine crackles and whatnot, but it is a diffuse process. Bilateral interstitial disease, diffuse, and then at the bases, you will see this subpleural honeycombing type pattern, fibrotic pattern. This next case, COPD patient presents with acute dyspnea and wheezing. Identify the abnormality. Left pneumothorax, right pneumothorax, bolus emphysema, or pneumomediastinum. A, B, C, C. You're right. So what you see here, is in the right lung, you have this huge, large bullet. It's not a pneumothorax. If it was a pneumothorax, the lung would you would see the lung edge this way, not this way. And you don't see any markings here, but you do see septa demarcating the large bullet. And there's no vasculature or anything in there. So please don't stick a needle in this. It's not a pneumothorax. The patient presents with complaints of chronic cough. Choice A, cystic fibrosis. B, primary ciliary dyskinesia. C, alpha 1, and D is idiopathic pulmonary. So A, B? Yep. It's not a backwards x-ray. This is primary ciliary dyskinesia, this x-ray also shows dextrocardia and bronchiectatic changes, classically seen in Kartagner syndrome. This is an asymptomatic patient with breast cancer. I'll never forget this x-ray. It was on my board exam when we had the Kodachrome slide and the light bulb blew out, and that was a whole different form of panic. But this person is asymptomatic, history of breast cancer. This is a preoperative x-ray for a different procedure. So choice A, hyaluronopathy. B, pulmonary hypertension. C, right mastectomy. D, retrocardiac infiltrate. A, B, C? C, you're right. So this lady has a right mastectomy. You can see the shadow here, but you don't see the breast shadow here. So the point I want to make with this x-ray is to always look at the soft tissue structures. Don't just look at the lungs and get focused and forget the rest of the x-ray. This patient presents with fever, chills, night sweats, and weight loss. I guess this could have multiple answers. So choice A, septic pulmonary emboli, B, pulmonary mets, C, TB, D, nodular sarcoid. A, B, C, D. This patient, the answer is pulmonary mets, but if you look at the question again, I should probably rewrite it, but you can make a case that it could be septic pulmonary emboli as well. They're diffuse bilateral nodules. You don't usually see that kind of a pattern in TB. You could see it in nodular sarcoid, but the fever, chills, night sweats doesn't go along with it. So the best answer is probably A or B. Anybody with multiple pulmonary nodules, it's pulmonary mets until proven otherwise. This patient presents with chest pain and hemoptysis. A, foreign body aspiration. B, pulmonary mycetoma. C, bronchogenic carcinoma. D, lung abscess. So A, B, C, D. You guys are not playing. So the answer is choice B. And the reason for that, what you see here is this abnormality, right? It's visible, and it is circular. And if you look at the CAT scan, it is a cavity. It's fairly thick-walled, and it's got this little ball in it. And what you see here is this lucency, or a half moon, which is called the air crescent sign. And this is classic for pulmonary mycetoma or aspergilloma or any kind of fungal type of infection. This patient presents with severe coughing, retching, dyspnea, and chest discomfort. It may not be... The x-ray could probably be better. You may not be able to see the abnormality, but the choices are A, pneumothorax, B, pneumoperitoneum, C, pneumomediastinum, or D, esophageal rupture. So A, B, C. Yep. Whoops. Yes. And D. So the answer, you're right, is C, pneumomediastinum. And what you see here, you don't see a pneumothorax. It may not be hard on this image, but take my word, there's no pneumothorax. But I want to point out there is air in the neck. So it probably came from the mediastinum, which is the most likely place that air can come to get there. So this is a pneumomediastinum. It's not esophageal rupture. Usually, can you have both? Yes, you can. But usually with esophageal rupture, with all that retching and whatnot, you would see some sort of pleural effusion or something. The CAT scan would be a better image to do. It's not pneumothorax and it's not pneumoperitoneum. There's no air under the diaphragm. This patient is a lifelong non-smoker. They're asymptomatic, and look what we found. Choice A is bronchogenic carcinoma, B, hamartoma, C, lipoma, D, pulmonary sequestration. A, B, yep, C, D. I gave you the answer before even giving you a chance. So you're right, the answer is hamartoma, and you can see here the abnormality is right here at the base, and it's got, if you look here, this is the zoom, and you can see it's got the popcorn calcifications that we talked about earlier, and in the midst of fat. This patient presents with severe dyspnea, hypoxemia, hypotension, tachycardia. You better do something fast. Choice A, pericardial tamponade. Choice B, tension pneumo. C, hydrothorax. D, acute COPD exacerbation. So A, B, C, D. So you're right, the answer is tension pneumothorax. And what you see here, this lung is completely down. You see the lung edge right here. And you can see the mediastinal shift causing the symptomatic hypotension, tachycardia, and hypoxemia. Next one, patient presents with severe chest pain, dyspnea, following trauma. Terrible. Poor guy. So choice A, congestive heart failure. B, multilobar pneumonia. C, pneumopericardium, and D, flail chest. Yes, you're right. D, flail chest is the answer. You can see multiple broken ribs. Two or more, the flail chest is two or more broken ribs in two or more places. And you can see, I can't see from here, but the ribs broken are right here, here, here. And you can see there's subcutaneous air. They probably have some kind of pneumothorax or something going on. A CAT scan would give you a better idea. This patient presents with right-sided chest discomfort and dyspnea. A, pneumonia with parapneumonic effusion. B, bronchogenic carcinoma. C, pulmonary emboli. D, pleural malignancy. A, B, C, D. The answer is PE. You're right. What you see here is the filling defect, and distal to it what is likely a pulmonary infarct. Could it be pneumonia? Probably not. It's usually not up high-shaped at the periphery. This is a very small effusion, but you see this, which is really the key feature, the interluminal filling defect that suggests pulmonary emboli. Couple more. Patient presents with intermittent abdominal discomfort. Choice A, pneumoperitoneum. B, Kyle-Dittey syndrome. C, ischemic bowel, and D, volvulus. A, B, C, D. Well, you're right, that's great. It's Kyle-Dittey syndrome. I had no idea what it was. But what it is, it's transposition of the transverse colon above the liver edge. And it almost looks like, it gives you the impression that if you look too quickly, answer too quickly, that there's free air under the diaphragm. But what you see here is haustrations to suggest that it's bowel and not just free air. These people classically present with intermittent abdominal discomfort, comes and goes, and if they're really big complainers, they buy themselves an X-lap. This patient with a history of CHF and COPD presents with mild dyspnea. A, mucoid impaction. B, rounded atelectasis. C, pulmonary pseudotumor. And D, bronchogenic carcinoma. A, B, C, D. You're right. The answer is C. It's pulmonary pseudotumor. And you could see here it's a round density. It's almost a football. It is a football shaped. It's elliptical. Usually bronchogenic carcinoma is not elliptical. Rounded atelectasis doesn't really look this pattern. And mucoid impaction would cause some degree of atelectasis. So this patient has fluid in the fissure causing this elliptical pseudotumor shape. And likely post-diuresis, sometimes we see that. Last one, patient is in the ED after falling down the stairs. A, pneumothorax. B, fractured ribs. C, fractured clavicle. And D, normal X-ray. A, B, C, D. All right. It is kind of obvious it's a fractured clavicle, but the point I want to make with this x-ray again is be sure not just to look at the lungs, to look at all the structures, the soft tissue under the diaphragm, behind the heart, and the bones as well. So I think that's it.
All right. What I'm going to do is that we talked a little bit about spirometry earlier today, so now I'm going to do a quick review specifically on that. If I get that working, maybe. Maybe not. This may be a very short lecture. Oh, there we go. Good. All right, now we're cooking. All right. In order to do, we'll talk first about spirometry, because that's most likely what they're going to ask you about. In order to interpret spirometry, you need three things. You need to know the person's age. Older people, as you go up to your 18, your lungs are growing, and then from then on, they start getting smaller. Men have bigger legs, have bigger lungs than women, and taller people have bigger lungs than smaller people. So that once you know those three variables, you can plug them into an equation. I'll show you how to get the equations. And you, for all the parameters we're going to talk about, FEV1, FVC, you can get a predicted value in the liters or weights or whatever. And this is just showing the difference, races, racial comparisons. And these are prediction equations. All they do is they take thousands of patients, they measure all these things, they know the person's age, height, sex, and then they put that in the equation and come up with a prediction equation. Person goes to the lab, technician puts that in the computer, and the computer calculates their predicted values. So that for today, in order to read spirometry, you only need three things. You need to know the patient's vital capacity predicted. If it's greater than 80% of predicted, we're going to call it normal. You need to know the FEV1 again. If it's greater than 80%, we're going to call it normal. And you need to know the ratio between the FEV1 and the FVC. And that varies with age. It changes as we age. But for today, if your ratio is greater than 75, we're going to call it normal. And we're going to talk about the flow volume loop, the volume time. Actually, we already talked about some of this. Yeah. We talked about this earlier, so I'll just mention it again. Is that when you look at the flow volume, the volume time curve here, it should go up and plateau pretty quickly. The flow volume loop, it should look like a bright triangle, go up and then come down fairly quickly. When people have obstructive lung disease, they lack that plateau. It doesn't plateau at all, and they get a concavity in the expiratory limb as it goes down. And this we talked about before, this is the airway collapse pattern, where as soon as they start to exhale, airway closes and there's very little airflow. Restriction, we said that the volume is reduced, but flow stays relatively normal. In a restricted patient, you're still going to have a good plateau on the patient. Yeah, and we talked about this already. Now, I want to spend the next couple minutes showing a couple of cases. Now, they may show you a volume time curve, they may show you a flow volume loop, and they may show you numerical data. So I'm going to show each one of those for the next couple of slides, and we'll have normal, restricted, obstructive, and combined. All right, so we got a female, 59 years old, she's Caucasian, being evaluated for asthma. And that's her volume time curve. What do you think? Does it look obstructed? Say no. It looks flat as a board. If it was obstructed, this would keep going up. Okay, so it looks pretty flat, and it has a good plateau. All right, so early plateau. And how about the flow volume loop? How does that look? Restricted, obstructed, or normal? Does it look like a right triangle? Yep. So this, again, looks normal even before you see the numerical data. And then when you look at the numerical data, the vital capacity is 88%, so that looks normal. It doesn't suggest any restriction. I think the FEV1, if I can read it, is 89, and the ratio is 84, I think. All right, so how would you interpret that? Obstructive, restricted, or normal? Normal, exactly. This is exactly what you should expect a normal individual. And if you look at the lung volume, they measured the lung volume. Total lung capacity was 92%. So again, this is a normal person, what you'd expect to see. Another patient, male, 57 years old, Caucasian. He's being evaluated for pulmonary fibrosis. How about that curve? Does it look obstructed or restricted? Or normal? Normal, yeah. It looks normal. It's a plateau. But people that have restriction can also have an early plateau too. So you're still going to need some more information. So this is an early plateau, but it's at a lower than predicted volume. And I'll show you what that means in a minute. Do the flow volume loop, does that look like a rig upright triangle? Not so much like the other one. It looks like it's more like a cone or a teepee. And when we look at the numbers, FEC is 41, FEV1 is 48, and the ratio is 93. So what is that normal, obstructed, or restricted? No takers? It's restricted, exactly right. So it's something where the lung volumes look small, but the ratio looks normal. That's typical of what you'd expect in a restricted patient. And when they measured total lung capacity, the total lung capacity was small. So this is a truly restricted patient. Okay, no obstruction at all. Another patient, a female, 59, Caucasian, has a history of asthma and interstitial lung disease. How about this one? Does it look obstructed, restricted, or normal? Well, it has to be, the fact that it plateaus means it's either normal or restricted. So that's the first thing you would look at, notice by looking at it. So this again is an early plateau, lower than predicted. Does that look like a right triangle? Not so much. It's just a little foreshortened. So again, it looks more like a cone than a right triangle. And when you look at the numbers, FVC is 46, FEV1 is 51%, and the ratio is 91. So obstructed, restricted, or normal? Restricted, exactly. So this is very similar. I just, and here, when they did again, when they measured the total lung capacity, it was low. So again, the restricted patient pattern, when people that are obstructed, the biome time curve is going to keep going up. Restricted or obstruction patient is going to plateau, and then you need the numbers to figure out which it is. All right. Another patient, male, 68 years old, Caucasian, history of COPD. How about this one? It looks obstructed, exactly right. And what's the difference between these two lines? One's pre-bronchodilator, one's post-bronchodilator. So that as soon as you look at it, it looks like an obstructed person that looks like they're going to have a significant improvement after they got their bronchodilator. Okay, so okay, long exhalation time, lacks a plateau. And other things, people should be able to exhale. A normal person within 3 seconds should be able to get all the air out of their lungs. Look how long this person's exhalation is. It looks like it's, 8 seconds, almost 8 seconds. So it should have been able to get the air out here, and it took him 5 additional seconds, and he still didn't get all the air out of his lung. Again, does this look like a right triangle, or does it look like it's concave? Say concave. Good. So it is concave. So this is a person that has an obstructive defect, and it looks like there's some improvement following bronchodilator administration. We look at the numbers. FEV1 is 56%. FEC is 56. FEV1 is 48, whatever that is. And the ratio is 65. So is this obstructed, restrictive, or combined? Say again? Come on, that's the trick. Anytime you have somebody that has obstruction, you always have to ask yourself, does this person have two diseases, the one that's making his lungs small and the one that's causing obstruction? For example, I have a patient that has emphysema that had a lung resected. She always has restriction because she had a lung resection. She always has obstruction because she's got COPD. So when you see a patient like this, you have to ask yourself, does the person have two diseases, one's causing obstruction and one is causing restriction, or do they have air trapped inside their lungs? People have emphysema or asthma, air gets trapped inside the lung and can make the vital capacity go down. So you always have to ask yourself that question. So we'll answer it in a second. All right, so now they did lung volume determination, and the total lung capacity is 92% of predicted. So does this person have obstruction, restriction, or combined? Go back. So do they have obstruction? What's the ratio? It's less than 75, you said, so it's 65. So do they have obstruction? Yes, okay. Do they have restriction based on just the spirometry? Yes, we said it's less than 80%. But when we did the lung volume determination, that says the total lung capacity is 92%. Is that normal? Yes, okay. So that this person has air trapped inside their lungs that makes the vital capacity go low, but when you measure total lung capacity, it's actually normal, okay? So this is a person who has mild obstructive defect, no restriction based on a TLC. And anytime you have a choice of using the vital capacity or the total lung capacity to see if somebody's restricted, you always pick the total lung capacity because that measures the residual volume, which spirometry does not, okay? Let's see. So female, 57. How are we on time? I'll be done in a minute. Female, 57 years old, Caucasian, has a history of COPD. Oh, I was really nice to you guys. I gave you the answer. Wow. So this one, you can see that there's no plateau on this at all, and there's a huge increase in the biomes when you get bronchodilated. So as soon as you see that, it's obstructed with reversibility. And does that look like a nice right triangle? Not at all. Completely, you can see how it's completely concave, and you can also see it looks like they got better post-bronchodilator. So now you look at the numbers. FVC is 50, FEV1 is 25, ratio is 41. So what does that tell you? Does the person have obstruction? Absolutely. Do they have restriction? It really answers you can't tell. You can't tell in this situation whether he has obstruction with air trapping or whether he's got two disease processes. So how are we going to tell the difference? Measure the total lung capacity. So you measure the total lung capacity, and this percent change. There was a 34% change in the FVC and a 48% change in the, so is there reversibility? Yes, way more than 12%. All right. Now we measure the total lung capacity. Total lung capacity is 102. So does he have obstruction, obstruction with restriction, or just obstruction? He just has obstructive lung disease. So, and again, in that situation, you always have to ask that question. Does he have obstruction with restriction or does he have air trapping? All right. And this person has severe obstructive defect, air trapping, no restriction. I think this is the last one. Male, 62, raised Caucasian, history of COPD. Same, I'll give you the answer. I'm just being too nice on this slide. Jesus. So here, plateau, it just keeps going. And plus, given bronchodilator, the two lines are superimposed. There was no improvement following bronchodilator. And same thing, it doesn't look like a right triangle. It looks like it's convex this way. No improvement. Now you do the volumes. Vital capacity is 53. FEV1 is 45. Ratio is 68. So is there obstruction? Absolutely. Is there restriction? You don't know. That's exactly the right answer. You don't know because you have to look at the total lung capacity. And here, you can see that the total lung capacity is only 74% of predicted, so it is low. So unlike the other one, which was pure obstruction with air trapping, this person has two defects. He's got an obstructive defect and a restrictive defect. All right? But I think it's a nice practical exercise. This is the kind of information you might get on the exam. So hopefully it'll be a good review for you. All right? Good luck.